Let me make sure I'm picking you up. Mm-hmm. I'm Mary Melcher. I'm interviewing Dora Ocampo Quezada in her home in Wickenburg, Arizona, on May 7th, 1998. Dora, I understand you're the second child of your parents. When were you born?
Right. 1921, December 4.
Mm-hmm. December 9th. Okay. And your parents' names were Jose and Francisca?
Jose and Francisca. Mm-hmm. Jose Franco was his mother's name, and Francisca Ocampo was her maiden name.
Mm-hmm. And she came from a longtime Arizona family, the Ocampos.
Going back to the mid-1860s, mm-hmm. Several generations, one, two... I would be fifth generation, Wickenburg. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And he was a rancher, your grandfather, Ocampo?
All my grandfathers, as far as I know, were ranchers, except one who was a shoemaker in Las Vegas, New Mexico. But the ones that lived here in Arizona were ranchers and cattle, and the great-great-grandfather, Valencia, was also entrepreneur and mining. He was not a miner, but he would cite mining claims for people, for mm-hmm. others. So he was quite knowledgeable in that area, and so they would look for him to do this kind of work. Right? But my grandfather Ocampo was in farming and cattle, horses.
Mm-hmm. Freighting also?
Freighting.
He did some freighting?
Teamster. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it seems like I've seen that name mm-hmm. in relation to freighting. Because mm-hmm. A lot of those early ones did freight.
Yeah, he had a brother here that came about to Wickenburg, Teodoro Ocampo, that grandfather, had a brother, Manuel, that came here maybe 20, 25 years later. I think it was about 1876, 75, something like that. Mm-hmm. And he came with the rest of the members of the Ocampo family. Mm-hmm. And he did mostly mining, mm-hmm. that one brother. Mm-hmm. So.
But Grandfather Ocampo had a ranch in the Wickenburg area.
Right. He sold it in 1908 when he became very ill. I don't know if you know all this, so. He had developed that piece of land, and we don't really know where the boundaries are. I mean, the deeds are not that exact. Descriptions, they're just sort of vague. I think my information leads us to believe that these were squatters in the mid 1860s. And then at a certain point, they got some kind of legal, whatever was needed. And he was up here, maybe, I guess the distance might be 2 miles from, say, the city limits mm-hmm. at that time. Mm-hmm. And part of his ranch was on the mesa, and then there was a drop-off. And the drop-off was quite a large, very fertile land mm-hmm. with a lot of wonderful, wonderful stacked up soil, really. Mm. I guess years of it. And then in 1890, he developed that land and into farming and cattle and horses. This was open range, so he used to build up quite large herds, not in the thousands, but in the hundreds. And then they would ship them off. And when he was well established, about 1870, maybe 4 or something like that, he made a trip specifically to bring his mother and brothers and sisters back, and his father. And then his...
back?
To Sonora,
Mexico. Oh, he
Mexico.
Took them to Sonora.
He went to get them. Uh-huh. But he was established here. He had a house. Uh-huh. He had plenty to, you know, he could support them. Uh-huh. And all that, and so he made the trip back, and coming, returning to Wickenburg in 1876, there was a skirmish with hostile Indians. You know, there was an awful lot of that activity that went on. And they tried to come in through Yuma from Caborca. That's a town where he came from. And his father was killed, and one brother was killed there. And the rest of the family came on. And there were two young sisters and a brother and his mother. And they lived out their lives here. And then they intermarried with local people. And so Manuel's family is his descendants are really a long, large, large group of people. Very large. Mm-hmm. I think they had about 10 children that lived. And that was another thing that would happen during those years. Now, my grandmother had, I believe, 7 or 8 children, but 3 survived to adulthood.
And what was her first name? She's married Ocampo?
Mariana Rodriguez married Teodoro Ocampo.
Mm-hmm. And how many survived?
3. And the others died when they were very young, you know, early teens. And some of them, one I think was about 7 or 8. And then a son survived until he was 20, I forget now, 25 maybe. And by that time, Wickenburg was a TB resort in the 1920s. And those hills that you see out there were covered with tents, TB tents. And the townspeople were prohibited to go out there. But anyway, there was a lot of that present. And I suppose it was easy to contract the disease if you had that weakness for it. And that's what happened to him. So he died, I think it was 1925. And that was the reason that my father gave up what he was doing in Walnut Grove with another ranching outfit and came to manage the Ocampo cattle back to Wickenburg.
Right.
And
so were you born on that ranch then?
No. I was born here in town.
Oh, you were?
My sister Josephine was born at home, and I was born at home. And the house where I was born is still standing.
Ah.
It's not too far from the bridge as you come into town.
Uh-huh. You know? And did your mother have a midwife or a doctor?
Doctor. She had a doctor for all the, well, drunk or sober, but they were doctors. She had a doctor for all the deliveries at home.
The same one, Dr. Copeland?
2. There was a Leister that came before Copeland.
Uh-huh.
He delivered me and my older sister. And I'm not sure if he delivered Alice or it was Copeland that delivered Alice.
She said
and
Copeland.
My 2 brothers. The 3 younger ones were delivered by Copeland.
Uh-huh. Do you know why she chose a doctor? Did she ever talk about it? Because a lot of Mexican American women
I don't think she had
midwives.
Oh, midwives. I suppose, I don't know, number one, they could afford it. Number two, probably she had more faith in, or hopes. Maybe that was more like hopes.
And the doctors did a good job?
Well, with her they did, yeah.
Yeah.
This same Dr. Copeland delivered one of my aunts, maybe 3 or 4 years later, and he really botched it up because she had a lot of complications. And she ended up with a lot of complications, fractured bones. She was paralyzed for several months. A lot of injury.
The mother?
The mother,
wow.
my mother's sister. And anyway, in the middle of the labor, she had to be taken to Phoenix for delivery.
Mm-hmm.
So she must have suffered an awful lot.
Mm-hmm.
Years later, 60 years later, we were on a trip with her to Las Vegas, New Mexico, where we had gone to meet other kissing cousins. I mean, lots of them. Oh, they're wonderful people. So my Aunt Eva fell on the side of the road. We'd gotten out of the car. She fell, and we had to take her to the emergency room because she was like 80, and we wanted to know if she'd hurt herself. So they did some x-rays, And that's when her daughters discovered or learned that every bone in her pelvis had fractures, healed, but they were there. And it had to have been from those difficult deliveries that she went through.
Like forceps? Hmm? I wonder if the doctor used forceps and broke some of her bones.
I don't know, he might have used a shovel, but this was in the 31, 32, 34, I think. So it wasn't a lack of knowledge. It was lack of knowledge maybe for those doctors.
Mm-hmm.
And so a different doctor came here in 1935. Dr. Copeland sold to a new doctor, younger man. And I don't know, I tend to be critical now, but I'm sure that at the time, this latest doctor had probably brought a lot of improvements. You know, you have to learn something with time.
Right, yeah. Weren't all that well trained. I mean, but sometimes the midwives did just as well, depending on how complicated the birth was. The midwives could have real difficulty with complicated births, too.
Yeah, they sure could.
And the doctors also, so.
Yeah. Years later, after my nursing training in the from say 49 to 54, I worked in a newborn nursery wing in a hospital in Mesa, Arizona. And I was charge nurse on my shift and all that stuff. I became very competent in deliveries. I had to deliver a lot of myself because the doctors were such mules. Had a lot of difficulty. Anyway, in delivery and timing the delivery. And then later on, I was in charge of the newborn nursery.
Mm.
And so it's very interconnected, the whole thing. Had a lot of interesting experiences those 3 or 4 years there. That's where that was the place where I had my first butt in with racist doctors and having to do with patients.
Oh, really?
With me, they were pleasant, but I knew that I was more competent. I knew that I was more competent than a number of people that were promoted over me.
Mm-hmm.
And because I was studying at the time at ASU, I wanted to get a degree in nursing, Bachelor of Science in Nursing, which they were offering that year. And I was in the first group that went in. And to this day, that was, I started in 49, I believe, and finished in 51.
Great. Okay, well, we're getting ahead of ourselves.
Yes. Yeah.
Let's see. So you were telling me about your parents. So you grew up along the river.
Oh, yeah.
From what Alice was saying.
That was my playground.
You played outside a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And she told me school was very important in your family.
Oh, it was major. It was the only thing we were supposed to think about.
Other than
and we thoughts. Accepted it. And we one of the reasons we accepted the whole thing is because our extended family and family friends, there was a lot of association, people association, you know.
Mm-hmm.
No other distractions, no TV. There were a lot of gatherings, especially on Sundays and funerals and other events. But anyway, my mother would brag about us. But you know that we didn't know that until we were adults, when people started telling us. Well, she used to say this about you, or she said that about you. It was very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, we got a lot of support from all these people,
mm-hmm.
adults.
And they are relatives, or are they friends? Or
some of them were relatives, and some of them were friends.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so we felt, it made us feel important.
Mm-hmm.
And then as far as my parents were concerned, they just insisted that was our job, you know, that's what you're there for. And all of the five kids, I think, felt that way about school. I have one brother that was very bright, and other things. But anyway, he felt that the schools weren't good enough.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't, he didn't talk about it at the time.
Mm-hmm.
He discussed. This was his opinion that he shared with us after, you know, 20 years later.
Right.
He would criticize this and that and the other.
He had
a different insight.
Mm-hmm. And but, what about, you spoke Spanish when you went to school?
Oh, yes. In the house, we always spoke Spanish, period. And with kids, you know.
When did you learn English?
At the same time.
That you were going to school?
I already knew English.
Oh, you learned
English. I knew. Alice knew English when we started school. I don't know when I learned English. I just knew it.
But your parents really didn't want you to speak it at home, so you were picking it up with your friends?
We were picking it up everywhere. Yeah, sure. It was, you know, kids you played with, I guess. Mm-hmm. And then my older sister was 1 year ahead of me in school, and she didn't know. She'll tell you about that, but she didn't know mm-hmm. English.
Right. So maybe it was a little
harder
for her.
I think that I learned probably a lot from her. Uh-huh. And I mean, it was just there, you know. I don't know how
you gradually picked it up when you were before school. It sounds like.
Oh yeah, when I entered school, I knew English.
But it's interesting that you knew it that well, since your parents wanted you to speak Spanish only at home.
Well, but if you're exposed to 7 languages, you're going to learn them. I had a niece that spoke 4 languages when she started school.
Wow.
And it was deliberate. It was the family, the parents, since. Wanted her to. The father was Italian, the mother was Mexican, and she spoke French and German. She was so precocious with it that they televised her. They made a show out of her, you know, the public. She was. I mean, she... But I think it was the concentration. I don't know. I'm not an authority on how people learn languages, but I have a feeling that everybody learns languages if the conditions are right.
Uh-huh.
And they learn every language that, as a child, especially every language that's out there. A lot of people that we grew up with, was our age, you know, like when my father was in his 70s, would drop by the house, and these were people that at home spoke French, here in Wickenburg, spoke French and Spanish. They would go into the house, our house. And that's what they would speak to my dad in Spanish. In English, of course, they spoke English. But what I'm saying is that kids, some kids anyway, can do it. And I think all of them can if the attitude is right. But when you, like my sister was punished here in school for not speaking English. So she has a different attack on it. She has a different interesting attack. I mean, it affected her to this day.
Sure, it would. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also it resulted in some kids taking a couple years in first grade. I mean, if they had a difficulty learning English and they weren't taught it all in Spanish, they could be held back.
That's not necessary. I have bad feelings about that.
Uh-huh.
I really do. I know what you're saying. It happened.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It happened.
Yeah, I interviewed somebody who spent mm-hmm. a couple years in first grade.
They put my sister in the dummy class the first day she entered school. I don't want to steal her thunder, mm-hmm. but it's such a sad story.
Mm-hmm.
She's probably the brightest of the whole bunch, and she was the first, so she was the pathfinder, right? And they put her in a row of dummies, and she was there for a week because she didn't know English. And at the end of the week, they moved her into the smart kids.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in 1 week, at the end of her school year, we have a certificate that shows that she achieved the highest point average of any kid in Wickenburg schools, grammar and high school. You know?
That's great.
So it had to do with a lot of things, mm-hmm. why she was successful. But the treatment she got, she's never forgotten it.
Oh, really?
She's never forgotten how she felt.
Mm-hmm.
Because
mm-hmm.
she knew she was in a dummy role. Now, why do people do that? Why do teachers do that? Why do schools do that? At the time, by the way, the law was that in Arizona. Segregated schools. There's a lot of reasons why they didn't have segregated schools here. Number one, a Mexican man gave the property for the school. The first school. My grandfather Valencia was a board of trustees in the Vulture School, the first school. hired the first school teacher in Vulture. You know, mm-hmm. they were into it, into the right. education thing.
Yeah, they had a strong presence from
I think so.
Ways back. Yeah,
and so helps. Maybe that's why we didn't have two schools in Wickenburg. Mm-hmm. Because up to the time that Mr. Garcia donated that land, they had schooling in this house and that house and the other house. And it was public school, numbers, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. It was an organized, legal school.
Right.
But they didn't allow the Mexican kids to go to those schools.
Oh, really?
They were in somebody's house.
They segregated mostly. That way.
They were segregated that way. And that would have been, before 1890, maybe. My mother, when she started first grade, walked from the ranch to school. Her mother would walk her. And that went on for a few weeks, or maybe a few months. And then my grandfather built a house in town, a frame building. And during the school year then, they lived in that house in town. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. Sure. So she didn't have to walk anymore.
That was pretty common.
But they got her here. That's my point. Right. It's like my father, during the floods, would get us to school. We just could not miss school.
Uh-huh. That's great.
And even, I guess, when you accidentally did miss school because of circumstances, you still felt like you'd done all you could to get there. Mm-hmm. And that was the spirit that we grew up with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. And you went to church in Wickenburg?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. I mean, you didn't dare not to, no matter how you felt. You didn't dare feel not to. Yeah, we had... my grandmother was one of those that had church at home before they built the church here in 1903. And even then, after they built the church, they didn't have a designated priest living here mm-hmm. until, I think, the 1940s. Mm-hmm. They were circuit priests. Mm-hmm. And my grandmother's, Ocampo's, next to the last child was the first one baptized in that new Catholic church. All the others were taken by buggy to Phoenix, to St. Mary's. Mm-hmm. And that's where they were all baptized. Oh. She didn't wait for the circuit priests to come around. They were very deeply religious people. Mm-hmm. She and her mother and her grandmother, you know, all that group of people. In New Mexico, they still, it's just great to listen to them talk about their memories. Mm-hmm. About this big extended family that we have. It's real nice.
So you graduated from high school in...
38 or 39. I think it was 39.
You were born in 1921, weren't you?
Uh-huh.
So it would have been about 1939.
I was 17.
Okay, what did you want to do then?
Well, I had not taken chemistry, and I wanted to go to nursing school. But I was a gadfly in high school. I had to be in everything. I had to do everything. I was one of the least scholarly of my mother's and father's kids, but I had a lot of fun with extracurricular stuff, and I was always in all that stuff. They had a lot of dramatic clubs and a lot of sports, and it was such a tiny school that if you were interested in that, they needed you. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that very often a kid was ostracized, you know, not chosen mm-hmm. to be on this or not chosen. I have pictures of all school plays, for instance, operettas, and I have lead part singing. There are four of us that took a lead part, two boys and two girls. This is high school, and the entire student body is photographed there that was in this operetta. And I don't remember, it was about maybe I was a junior or senior. So anyway, I needed chemistry. And so I talked to the, after I graduated, I was babysitting somebody's kids over here. Well, I was not going to stay in this town and be a domesticated servant to anybody. So I talked to this biology teacher, and I said, look, I want to go to nursing school, but I need chemistry. Okay, come on such and such days, such and such hour, and we'll give you chemistry. We'll take you one semester. Mm-hmm. That's the way I got my chemistry.
After high school?
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they accommodated me. And so then I started nursing school in Phoenix in, I think, 1940. So.
At ASU?
No. St. Joseph's Hospital School of Nursing. They had two schools of nursing. Mm-hmm. One at St. Joseph's Hospital and one at Good Samaritan. And one time when I got in trouble with the nuns, they ran the St. Joseph's School. I was in a lot of trouble with them. And they wanted to know why I was even there. And I said, well, because St. Joseph's has the best reputation for turning out good nurses. The Good Samaritan does not.
Did they like that?
No. They didn't like any of that stuff. But, and so then they made me recite a certain sermon that had been delivered that morning. They were checking up on me. You know, they really monitored your behavior. And you had certain religious events. You had to be present or else, because you were a rotten example and, you know, all that. And so what I would play games with them. See, this is me. I'd play games with them, and I'd hide behind maybe a pillar or I'd sit behind a pillar so they'd think I wasn't there. Because I knew that up there in the belfry, they were checking up on us, attendance. 5 o'clock in the morning. So then she says, well, recite the sermon. Tell me what it is. I told her, almost verbatim. She says, if I could, I would transfer you to Good Samaritan today. So,
and when you did this training, did they also, they had you work in the hospital, right?
Oh, yes. We got paid $5 a month, and almost every bit of that went for missing bedpans or broken thermometers or something else, equipment that you would check out for patients that you had no control over. Mm. You know, somebody else had to return it, right?
Oh, yeah.
And so we were charged with that. That's what the $5 was for, really. It wasn't a salary, although they called it, this is your spending money. They were very, very strict. There's nothing like today. I mean, I don't think there's a place alive that's like today.
Didn't you have to do, like, washing things down, too? I remember talking
about the beds and the bedpans, all that stuff. Yeah,
you had to wash everything because it wasn't plastic. It had to be washed.
It was metal. Everything was metal and glass. Uh-huh.
So you were doing a lot of that kind of manual labor while you were getting your training.
Yes, but we didn't do it really until maybe 9 months. And then the younger kids would take over that stuff. Mm-hmm. And the beds, all that had to be scrubbed down. Mm-hmm. It was very good. It was a very good school. I learned a lot. My first job after I got out of there, they were very strict, but then kids think this of no matter what, right? Mm-hmm. I got my first job here in the doctor's office, Dr. Browlier, and I had a letter from his office nurse asking me to come and take her job. She wanted out, and that he wanted me to, you know, come and all that stuff. Well, so I did, and they paid me, I think it was $128 or $126 a month, which was rich. The nurses in the hospital here were getting about 60. The teachers were getting about 55, and, you know, it was very low. So there was, when I came here, there was a lot of bad feeling among the nurses that were hospital people, and me, the upstart, twerp, you know. I was 21. Mm-hmm. I stayed a few months, and then I went to Alamogordo, New Mexico, and took a job there in a civilian clinic connected to the Air Force. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, they were working on mysterious things, airplanes and whatever. But I worked with the civilian workers. And then while I was there, I sent in my application for to join the service, the Army Nurse Corps. And I think it was the following March. I graduated in September, and the following March I enlisted in the, I got my commission.
So that would have been like 41, 42?
I graduated in 43. Okay. So it would have been the spring of 44 that I went in. I stayed a couple of years till everything was over, maybe 2.5, I don't know.
Where were you stationed?
I spent my whole time in San Antonio, Texas, It was a, we called it a receiving hospital. They would bring, regional hospital. They would bring injured people there that would come from the West Coast. And these were people that